The following presentation is brought to you from the supporters of the Church of the Sovereign God.
One of the major themes running throughout the entirety of the Bible deals with freedom versus bondage. Now, you might recognize that statement because it was the opening statement I made in a sermon a few weeks back on this particular topic. And we're going to review some of those things that we talked about in that one, then get into some new information today. But what we saw at that time and what we certainly should all understand is the Bible is full of concepts of slavery and bondage, servitude, being a slave. I entitled that recent sermon that where we covered a lot of this information as In Service to God. And the message today, we're going to cover some additional information. In the Word of God, there are multiple passages, different verses throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament, talk about the subject of bondage, about being a servant, about being a slave or a bond slave, being in voluntary servitude. These words, these concepts, these ideas can be found in both Old and New Testament. I have entitled this message, In Service to God, Part 2. In the New Testament, we see some very important ways of serving, while at the same time clearly seeing emphasis being placed on the point that we do not own ourselves. In other words, we are bought with a price. There's a reason for that. Go with me to 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 20. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 20. For you are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Therefore, knowing this, that we don't own ourselves, that we've been bought by God, we see that we are to be submissive servants to God. He owns us. For that to originally happen, we also had to, he had to call us, and then we had to be voluntarily submitting ourselves to him to be able to do that. A lot more to that topic than I'm going to talk about at this particular time. We also see clearly the Bible states that we are to serve one another. Now, the biggie is, of course, that we serve God. But Galatians 6 in verse 2 says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. So we are to be serving one another. And again, we also pointed out in that, as part of the review of part one, we see that Jesus, of course, set the loving example that he did, that he came to serve, not to be served, but to serve. Matthew 20 and verse 28, New International Version, Matthew 20 and verse 28, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. And then we'll read another verse that shows, so what does this have to do with us? 1 Peter 2 and verse 21. 1 Peter 2, verse 21. For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow his steps. He came to serve. We are called to follow his example. We are to serve. Yet I know that we all recognize the fact that if we just simply look around in our society today, we clearly see that the Bible shows that we are to be servants of God. Now, that's not what we see in our society today. It's anti-God. It's not serving God. It's, in fact, if you are a worshiper, a believer, and people, so many people know about it, so many times we're actually condemned by the society for doing it. I'm not saying every individual. I'm saying that is something that is increasingly more and more that we become aware of in our society today. Also in part one, we saw that it was not an accident that Jesus chose to teach this lesson of serving one another to his disciples by doing the job that was typically done by the lowest servant in the household. And of course, that was the foot washing. And he says, happy if you know and you do these things. So we're to be doing these things. And I'm not talking about just foot washing. I'm talking about that attitude of it. Because what Jesus was showing through doing this, that there was no job of service that was beneath his dignity to do. And so what about us? Are there any acts of service that are below or beneath our dignity? Also in part one, we saw the two key elements in righteous service contained in the phrase, created by him and for him. We read that in Colossians 1 and verse 16, for by him were all things created. And of course, the him here is Jesus Christ, that are in heaven, that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. And we talked more than we're going to do today. This is more of a review of that part. But one element of service is quite obvious, and that is created for him. Yet the second one, created by him, is something that is little known, little understood, and little discussed. So we ask, why would God the Father serve Jesus, have him do something by putting him to work, by getting him involved in the creation? And then, of course, we pointed out in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26, we saw that was a father doing the speaking, and he said, let us make man in our image. So we ask the question, why would God serve Jesus in this way? Let's take a look at this question. Consider this question. What dignity is there in giving an able-bodied man all that he needs, food stamps, place to shelter, wherever, you know, and then some cash along the way, all of those kinds of things, and telling him he doesn't have to work, that you're going to take care of him? What honor, what dignity is in that? And the answer is very clearly, none. But that also is increasingly happening more and more in our society today. Contrary to the principles of the Bible. Yeah, there's a time whenever a person needs to be taken care of that way. I'm not talking about that. God's system of service involves this aspect of dignity with regard to helping others be able to help themselves. And the Bible is full of these kinds of witnesses to see this particular aspect of service and this principle of service. An important point that we also pointed out from part one was seeing that we serve a person in order for him to be capable of taking care of himself, and as a result of that, to be able to help others, to be able to help others. It is a way of passing on a part of God's nature, and that part of God's nature is that he works, he puts forth effort for purpose. We also saw for us to serve an able-bodied man, placing him in a place where we incapacitate him, where he doesn't have to do anything. It's not a service, but it is actually a disservice. So we see that true righteous service has two important points for us to focus on. And this is all still part of part one. We're almost done with part one, But anyway, those 2 points was number one is the one being served should truly experience some benefit. And number two, the service should be done in the direction to help the one being served so that they can better take care of themselves, whatever it is that they need to do. And doing it that way, which is the godly principle, it is actually recognizing the point that this person that is being served, that is being helped, has a worth, has a value, has something also that they, he, she can offer. Now, with this in mind, I want us to transition, but I think that we had to have that information first to be able to really see this information. The first thing I want us to take a look at here is that we need to look at some possible common pitfalls associated with service. Let me give you just a few of them. And I do have them numbered more than anything is to help me know where I am. Number one, and it's not the order, it's not the important thing, it's just the information. Number one, sometimes people serve to be seen. Number two, sometimes people serve for some other personal advantage. Now, you can think about all the details and you can think about all of these. Number three, sometimes the person we think we need to serve doesn't really need or want our help. I remember several years ago seeing this cartoon. Sometimes cartoons scream for us lessons for us to learn from. But it's a cartoon of a boy scout who's trying to help the little old lady across the street. Number three, sometimes a person we think needs to be served doesn't really need or want help. Maybe they wasn't really wanting to go that direction across the street. Maybe they were wanting to go the other. So we don't know. But you just see the cartoon and that's all it is. There was no words. It was just the cartoon. Number four, sometimes we quit serving when we don't get thanked. Number five, sometimes we get bitter or resentful about serving because the one that we're trying to help takes advantage of us. Ever been taken advantage of somebody that you're trying to help? Of course, probably if you've tried to help somebody, you've been taken advantage by somebody. That's just part of it. Sometimes, number six, sometimes we don't want to serve where we have been asked to serve. In other words, we'd rather serve somewhere else. I can give you examples in the ministry. Minister means servant. There's times in the church where there have been people that are given assignments. Now, whether it was the right order, the right way it should have been done is not even my point. It was the way it was done. But a minister, more than one, has been told, we're going to transfer you and we're going to send you to this particular church area. And they go, don't want to go there. And I know at least on two occasions, I know personally on two occasions where ministers resigned from the ministry to keep from being transferred to particular areas. Wow. Probably if you stop and think about it, good. Number seven, sometimes we quit serving because we get what we want. I remember also being in Pasadena, there was one of what I would consider as one of the leading ministers made a statement one time in a sermon, and he said, quote, one of the best ways to get a person to stop serving is to ordain him or her to an office. How many times that statement has been proven true? These are some pitfalls. There are others, and I know that you can think of some on your own. But here, I want to ask the question. Why don't I or why don't you serve? Or maybe we could ask it on the other side. Why do I or why do you serve? I ask these questions, brethren, because we have all been called to service. We read that. That was all part of part one. We see that. We got it. We understand it. And so, yes, first and foremost, we are to serve God, and we also are to be serving one another. This requires both our outward behaviors as well as our inward attitudes toward God. In 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, it states, God loves a cheerful giver. And from that statement, God loves a cheerful giver, we see both of these aspects. We see outward behavior as well as inward attitudes that we have toward God in that. Is that where we are? Also, another thing along this line that we certainly need to know and understand and bring it out, put it out forward, is that God alone has the right to decide what pleases Him. We cannot do just any old thing that we think is nice to do and then expect it to please God. That's not the way it works. We have to approach our service to God on His terms. And so therefore, that's why we do sermonettes and sermons occasionally on this topic of service, looking at it, well, what does God have to say on it? Not what do I think, what do you think, what does God say on it? And this is what we're trying to look at. In Exodus chapter 20, we know Exodus 20 is where He gives the codification, the listing of the Ten Commandments. And He makes the statement that we are not to bow down to nor to serve other gods. Go with me to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 1. Exodus 20 and verse 1. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Right off the bat, and giving them the Ten Commandments, He says, I have to be first. I have to come first. I have to be first in your life. There's no way that you can do this toward anything else and that's going to be in my place. Number 4, you shall not make unto you any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. It makes it pretty clear. In verse 5, you shall not bow down yourself to them nor serve them because I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God. You don't think this is important to God? Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Is He tying this in that we deciding that we want to serve God the way we want to do it? Is God saying that is, in essence, hating Him? That's exactly what He's saying. Putting anything before God is serving other gods. And what that anything is makes no difference what it is. God has to always be first, have to. We also need to realize, brethren, that a large portion of what we do to serve God is done in how we serve, take care of, do our part toward our fellow man, toward serving one another. Revelation chapter 5 and verse 10. Revelation 5 and verse 10. And has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. We know that we look forward to this. God has called us to be kings and priests in His family. You want to use the word government, fine. I call it family. Those are jobs of service as well as jobs or responsibilities of leadership and responsibility. And we have it toward God and we have this toward one another. The key of service is so important, in fact, that God has stated that no ruler, no leader in His government, who does not have God's spirit and attitude of service. That's how important it is toward Him. Over the years in the ministry, I have heard from more than one person make statements somewhere along the line of, I don't want to be a ruler or a judge over others. I just want to be in God's family. This sounds nice, doesn't it? There's a problem. There's a problem with this. The problem is we're deciding how we're going to do it. It's putting ourselves, it's putting something else in the place of God. God has already said how we're to be doing this. He gets to decide, not us. I don't know, maybe some of you may think that. We need to understand, no one is going to be in God's family. This is going to sound really hard. It's true, though. No one will be in God's family who does not want to lead or rule. The reason is because they will not have his attitude of service. I don't want to serve others. You just said, I don't want to be like God. We don't want to serve the way leaders in our society today tries to lead and serve. We want to do it God's way. That's why I said we need to take a look at these principles from time to time. Now, along with pitfalls, there also are some what I'm calling here telltale signs of true righteous service. In other words, we ask the question, what are some of the characteristics that we must exhibit to rule, to teach, and to serve in God's family? What is it going to look like for me to do this? What do I need to have in mind? Matthew chapter 20 sets the overall tone for this service, servant, ruler responsibility. It clearly indicates that Jesus ministers to or serves others. We've already read it. We're to follow his example. So let's go to Matthew chapter 20, beginning in verse 20. Matthew 20, verse 20. You know this account, but there's huge lessons in this. Then came to Jesus, the mother of Zebedee's children, with her sons. Her sons are James and John, to worship him, and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said unto him, what is it that you desire? That's not what the King James says, but that's what he asks. That's what he's asking her. And she said unto me, grant that these my two sons may sit one on the right hand and the other on the left hand in your kingdom. Oh, that sounds nice. Well, let's go on. And Jesus answered and said, you don't know what you're asking. And he says this, he's answering this to the two children, to the boys, James and John. Are you, James and John, able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of and to be baptized with the baptism that I shall be baptized with? And James and John said, we are able. In verse 23, and then Jesus said unto them, you shall drink indeed of my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. Now, what we need to understand what he's talking about here is martyrdom. Now, I don't know how much they understood. Yes, whatever, we can do that. Well, you are going to. And then he says, but to sit on my right hand and to my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given unto them for whom it is prepared of my Father. And when the other ten of the disciples heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brothers. And Jesus called unto them, saying, you know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them. In other words, they lord it over them. And they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoso will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whoso will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Brethren, please understand what leadership opportunities that God is going to be given to us for all eternity, but we need to also recognize what is required. And yes, this will absolutely require us to have a kind of servant service attitude, behavior. Jesus offered, gave, provided toward all mankind that he came in contact with when he walked on the earth. So what are some of the characteristics of that kind of service? Let me give you a few of them. There are many, many others, and I was somewhat selective in using these. There are others. And again, I number them. Number one, it is lawful. Now, what I mean by that, it isn't helping or serving at all if we assist someone in doing something that is illegal or that is contrary to the law, whether it be the law of God or whether it be the law of man. I mean, we have to consider it in that way. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 5. 2 Timothy 2, verse 5. And if a man also strive for mastery, yet he is not crowned except he strive lawfully. So it has to be lawful. It has to be legal. Number two, it edifies. It builds up. It shores up. It strengthens up whatever it is that is weak or weaker. Romans 15 and verse 1. Romans 15 and verse 1. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, to his building up. So he's going to get the benefit from this. For even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproaches you fell on me. And so the second point here is it edifies, it builds up. In other words, it strengthens the person that you're helping or you're serving. Number three, esteem others better than self. This kind of service will not take away a person's dignity or honor. Philippians 2 and verse 3. Philippians 2, verse 3. Let nothing be done through strife or vain glory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Now, quickly, we should come to and remember John 13, Jesus' example of the foot washing. This is exactly what he's doing. This is exactly what he did. Number four, a lot more on that particular point, but let's move on. Number four, it is not done for glory of self or for reasons of pride or vanity or vainglory. That's what we just read in Philippians 2 and verse 3. Rather, what we see is that it is to be done for God's glory. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31. 1 Corinthians 10, 31. Whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, whatever it is that you do, this is what it says, do all to the glory of God. So if you're helping and serving another person, you do it so that God will be glorified. Not you for doing it. The other person is benefited. He's lifted up as a result of it, but God gets the glory. Number five, it is not done with the motivation of personal advantage. It is to be done for the other person's welfare. Very similar to what we just talked about. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 24. 10:24. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. And it's not talking about money here. It's talking about being profitable. Again, not necessarily talking about wealth. It's not talking about money. It's his well-being. That's how it should be, comes across. Verse 33, even as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Number six, it is not done in strife. Philippians 2 and verse 3 is all still part of that. But rather, it is to be done to promote peace and harmony. Here's the thing, brethren. If we are going to provoke one another, we need to do it how it is described in Hebrews chapter 10. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. One verse. Hebrews 10, verse 24. And let us consider one another to provoke. In several other translations, it says stimulate or motivate unto love, unto good works. We're to promote one another. We're to motivate them. We're to stir them up. We're to stimulate them unto love and good works. Number seven. It is flexible in its approach to the service needed, and it is to suit the service to the one needing the service. In other words, it is appropriate. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. 1 Corinthians 9, beginning in verse 19. For though I am free from all men, yet I have made myself servant unto all, that I may gain the more. And unto the Jews, in other words, he's not saying he profits more out of it. He's talking about to different peoples, more kinds of peoples. And this is the example he gives. Unto the Jew I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jew. To them that are under law, I became as those under the law. This is what he's saying. That I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law. Being not without law of God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I came weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might be by all means to save some. In other words, our service is to be appropriate to the situations. The Boy Scout helping the little old lady across the street. Number eight, it involves setting right examples. Now, this can be illustrated in the story of Mary and Martha, Lazarus' sisters. This is in Luke chapter 10. We're going to go there. We're going to read some verses there. Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet, learning from him, learning how to rule and how to serve, while at the same time, Martha mistakenly thought that she knew how to serve and what it was all about. Mary knew how to put first things first, to set priorities correctly. Luke 10, verse 38. Luke 10, 38. Now it came to pass, as they went, that he, Jesus, went into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house, and she had a sister, whose name was Mary, which sat at Jesus' feet, and heard his words. But Martha was cumbered about with much serving and came to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Bid her, therefore, that she comes and help me. 41. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, you are careful and troubled about many things. But this one thing is needful. And Mary has chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Matthew 6:33 also instructs us to seek first the kingdom of God. We are to set the priorities. That's an important point. Number nine, it is done quietly. It is done without show. It is done as secretly as is possible. Matthew 6, verse 2. Matthew 6, verse 2. Therefore, when you do your alms, do not sound a trumpet before you. Now, some people have come to the conclusion of this while reading this, don't do it this way. And as a result, they've come to the conclusion, oh, then he's saying that we don't need to do this. Read the rest of the verse. That's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying. Do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets. And that's what they were doing. They would do some alms, and they had people, trumpeters or people with shofars walking along with them, and they would do some good deed or good act, and they would blow the shofar, blow the trumpet, so everybody around would pay attention, and they say, look what this guy just did. And this is the illustration is Jesus is doing. He said, don't do it that way. But verily I say unto you, because they have their reward. But when you do alms, let not your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And that confuses people. And the main reason is because that is what is a Hebrewism. I mean, so I'm not getting into that, but it's a statement that is used, and the people at the time would have understood that in the context of, and we've missed it. We don't get it. That your alms may be in secret, and your Father which sees in secret himself shall reward you openly. So it is to be done quietly, without show, as secretly as it is possible. There's sometimes you can't. You know, you need to serve a person. Television crews are there. You're not doing it because the television is crew there. You're doing it because somebody needs to be served, needs to be helped in some way. Person runs into a burning building and helps people come out. That's an act of service, an act of love. And you can't do that in secret unless it's in a neighborhood where nobody cares what happens. But anyway, I know you get the point. Number 10, it is done cheerfully, without begrudging, and without keeping account. Do you remember 27 years and 4 months ago and 7 days when I did this for you? There's no reward in that. There's no reward in it. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. We read this earlier. We've referred to this earlier. Let every man according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver. Yeah, we read this often on holy days when we do taking up an offering. It doesn't have to be talking about an offering. It talks about, well, what's the purpose is in your heart? Let him give. Give the service could be talking about offerings, but it could be used in other ways too. Now, after seeing what we've seen, what are some practical ideas to help us to serve others? Well, there's going to be a lot, but I'm going to give you 3 points. There's a whole lot more you can come up with your own. Number one, be given to hospitality with food, with conversation, with time. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10. 1 Timothy 5, verse 10. Well reported of for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers. Number 2, relieve the afflicted. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10, the next part. If she has washed the saints' feet, we know that's Passover. If she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. And I have a number 3. Visit those who are afflicted. You know, it talks about the widows and the fatherless. We're going to read that verse. Do you know what makes them the widow? You know what makes them afflicted? Being the fatherless and the widow. So number 3 is visit those who are afflicted. We just covered that in point 2. Pray for them. and give them physically the things that they need as we're able to do so. James chapter 1, James chapter 1, verse 26 and 27. James 1, 26. If any man among you seem to be religious and bridles not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Acting one way and presenting yourself as something else. Number 27, next verse. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this: to visit the fatherless and widows in their afflictions. Being the fatherless and being the widow is the affliction. And to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, I don't know in particular anyone who may be thinking this thought, but some of you may not believe that being a servant is really all that important. Really? Well, go with me to Matthew 25, and we're going to see that just being in church is not enough. We have to be in church. We have to attend services. It says, don't forsake yourself. It's real clear. Instructions are there. So I'm not knocking people being in church. We need to be in services. We need to, being together on it. But go to Matthew chapter 25, verse 30, we begin, 31. Matthew 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him. This is trumpets. This is talking about Feast of Trumpets. Then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, all people, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. That also is a Hebrewism, to do one on one hand, one on the other. It's much more meaning than this, but let's just keep going. Verse 35. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Because I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then these righteous answered, speak to him, and saying, Lord, when did we see you? When did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked, or clothe you, and or see you sick or in prison and came unto you? Now, what's the implication already? That we're to be doing these things. That's the whole point. That's the whole point. And the king shall answer and say, then, verily I say unto you, insomuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Remember, we talked about going back all the way into part one. We brought it forward into this part two. We are to serve God, but we are also to serve one another. And there's all kinds of ways in which we do it. 41. Then he, the king, shall also say to them on his left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his demons. For I was hungry, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you didn't clothe me. Sick, in prison, you didn't visit me. And they said, hold it, wait a minute. When did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and didn't serve or minister unto you? I hope you're already getting the sense of what he's doing here, what he's saying here. Then he shall answer them and say, verily I say unto him, inasmuch as you did it not to one of the least of these, you did it not to me. Now, go one chapter before, Matthew 24, verse 45. Matthew 24, verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season. Well, we just read in chapter 25, those that are on the right hand, those who did this, who did all of these things, that's who's going to do it. But the question is asked a chapter before. And he gives the answer to this in 24. Verse 46, blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. Blessed is that servant who is doing. Doing what? Serving. Service to God, service to one another. Serving. But all of us need to become more and more aware of actually understanding what it means and what it looks like to be in service to God. The ironic blessing. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and to his sons, saying, on this wise you shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. We are blessed. We love you, brethren. God bless you all.
For more information or answers to your Bible questions, please contact the Church of the Sovereign God. Our website is www.cotsg.org. That's www.cotsg.org. Or you may write to us at Post Office Box 89111. That's Post Office Box 89111, Tampa, Florida 33689.